KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Rachel Miro. Coming up on Forum, we chat one-on-one with the new director of the State Parks Department. There's a backlog of maintenance projects stretching back decades, and so few rangers, the parks are largely run by volunteers. But after last year's headline-grabbing accounting scandal, Anthony Jackson's top priority has got to be restoring the public's trust. Forum is next, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Rachel Miro, sitting in for Michael Krasny. This hour, we talk to retired Marine Corps Major General Anthony Jackson, the brand new head of the California Department of Parks and Recreation. The Marines are famously tough, but this assignment may be tougher. Turning around an agency riddled with scandal and mismanagement at a time of tight budgets and plenty of other problems jostling for the attention of state government. Can he convince an army of park-loving volunteers across California that the agency is truly turning a new leaf? Anthony Jackson says he's the man to do it. He joins us today from our Sacramento studios. Thank you so much for being here with us.
You're welcome. I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
So for the benefit of people who haven't met you before, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay. It's kind of a long history. I guess I'd start with the fact that I'm an Army brat. I'm one of seven children. My father and mother finally decided to make their retirement home back when I was, in the ninth grade in Oakland, California. I was fortunate enough to go to Oakland High School, graduated from there, went to college on a football scholarship to a local Bay Area school, the Spartans of San Jose State. I graduated from there in 1971 and got my master's degree a year later. I fooled around a little while I tried to, when I was in college, I married a local gal from Lafayette, California, Susan. And she's also a San Jose State grad. And she taught in the high schools in San Jose for a few years before I joined the Marine Corps. And I joined the Marine Corps in 1975. The idea, the promise to her was that I would do it for 3 years. And of course, I retired last January 1st after 36 years, 7 months, and 1 day of service to our country.
And then so much for retirement. I mean, now
yeah, right.
You guys are busy once again.
Right.
No time for golf.
Right. I actually bought a really nice RV last January to for us to enjoy as a kind of our retirement gift to ourselves. And actually did that for a few months where I put 9,700 miles on my new RV before I was asked if I would come to California State Parks and Recreation to be of assistance.
Tell us a little bit about getting that call from Sacramento. Who wants to take a job like this? How did they sell it to you?
Well, I don't think it was as much a sales job. You know, and people have asked me why did I do this? People ask me why did I serve as long as I did in the Marine Corps and why did I join in the first place? And excuse me. As I reflected on an answer to that question, it comes up to me that it's all been about service before self. And there's a lot of people throughout the history of this country who have given a lot of people great opportunity. And being an African-American who has had the best of all of those generations of sacrifice, I actually felt when I joined the Marine Corps, just as I accepted this job, that being the beneficiary of all of those other personal sacrifices, that I should put myself in a position that service before self. And so when Secretary Laird asked me if I would be interested in coming to Sacramento, I think those same feelings and thoughts kind of echoed throughout my mind. But this time, unlike when I joined the Marine Corps, I sought the permission of my wife. And she was all for it because her family has a steep history of caring for the cultural and natural resources of the state of California. So once she said yes, it was very easy for me to put service before self.
So now in the last couple of months, you've enjoyed, I presume, a whistle-stop tour of the state's 278 parks. First impressions?
Well, I haven't seen all 280 parks yet, believe me. I have spend Mondays through Thursday, about three quarters a day on Thursday here in Sacramento. And then I get on an airplane or get in a car for Friday and Saturday tours of parks. And I've been as far south as Tijuana and so far as far north as Sonoma. And so I need to hit the most northern part of the state. But I've been in the Central Valley and I've been out into the desert and to off-road vehicle parks. And so I've tried to see as many as I can. And I'll continue to do that as long as I can to get familiar with both the people and the park system and all the foundations and associations, all the people who really love the park. So I ask the district managers when I show up in their district if they can put together a little town hall meetings or stuff like that where I can meet some of the supporters of the parks and try to rebuild that public confidence in the park system. What I've discovered in my, I guess I'm in my eighth week now, is that whether in San Francisco working in the park headquarters or out in the field, whether they're in uniform like our rangers and lifeguards, or whether they're work right here in a building as administrative assistants or whatever, the people who work in parks have a passion for them. And that's probably the number one thing that I see. And it's the same way with those association and foundation members who have struggled or who work so hard to keep their parks open, is there's an absolute passion out there for both the cultural and natural resources and museums of the state of California. We're kind of a blessed state in that regard.
I can imagine that while you've been on these various road trips, that at the first opportunity, local park managers, employees, even volunteers take you aside and give you an earful about what's going on in Sacramento.
Yeah, I certainly get challenged on that. If I can give you my interpretation of that, the state parks, the good thing, if you've been keeping up with this, either television, radio, or the newspaper, is you see that the money was more or less money that was sat there in various accounts. The $20 million, and then it was $36 million, which was properly accounted for in the off-road vehicle fund. And then there was, in one investigation, I think $3.9 million that was donated money that had no tag. It was donated to state parks, but not to a specific purpose. So people for too many years did not spend the money, and it was in interest-bearing accounts. And they did not steal the money, so the money still exists for use. And the legislature has and the governor have given us back $20 million that was in these in the one account, and the OHV money is still there. So we're able now to put that money back into the park system, the $20.5 million. So. And the $36 million is still in the OHV system. So the money is still there. Just really poor accounting is the way I would put it off.
But poor accounting? Is there also fundamental mismanagement there? I mean, you know,
yeah,
$20
I don't wanna
million isn't
be,
chicken feed.
Right. And I don't want to overdwell on that because I was not here. And so I don't want to be the one that passes final judgment on all the whys of it, okay? It wasn't, if I use another why, it's more like it wasn't wisely utilized. I think, though, if you were to look for a silver lining in the cloud, this gives us a tremendous opportunity to make significant changes and to move forward from where we are. The history is what it is, and you can't rewrite history, but you can move forward. And I'm in the process now of developing that strategic vision, which will, and with a lot of partners, and that will give us a 21st century park system, the envy of the world. And at the same time, I'm doing some reorganization so that we are more agile and that we have greater visibility of the budget.
Can you give us some broad outlines what that reorganization looks like?
I can give you kind of the purpose of the reorganization is to streamline our processes and to make more visible our finances. To just anybody in the public should be able to call up at any moment and say, hey, where was that last dime spent on whatever? And so we're developing those processes. And at the same time, we're kind of streamlining where before, when I got here, there were about 10, 11 deputies that report directly to the director. And that causes, by the time the director or his chief deputy would be on one problem, they'd get it maybe a tenth solved or a half solved, and then one of the other deputies would report to him. And so you kind of get a traffic jam of, and so problems weren't solved in what I would say would be an expeditious manner. And so I'm bringing in a couple of assistance to the chief deputy, which will allow for decisions to be made sometimes at a lower level. And that way that the things that the public brings to the table, we can get quicker answers to. And those things that we need to advance on, we can make more rapid decisions and move forward in a more agile way.
Along those lines, that means delegating decisions further down to perhaps the regional level. There's so many of these parks that are in desperate need of repair. And, you know, you mentioned that some of that $20 million might be going to help. But, you know, there is so much that's required at the local level. You can easily see how that money would be eaten up, you know, in a couple of bites.
Yeah. Well, you know, part of the money, if we looked at that $20.5 million, about $10 million of it is for matching funds. So where some of our associations and foundations and maybe even regional governments have contributed money and resources to keep parks open in their particular area, their fundraising, we'll be able to double down on the dollars basically that they're contributed. For instance, we just with the Henry Coe Park in the San Jose area, a very huge park there with a lot of wonderful natural resources in it. They raised $279,000 to help keep the parks open. Well, we just signed an agreement a couple of weeks ago with them to match their $279,000 so they can keep their ranger, keep their maintenance on board. We're in the process of negotiating 30 more of those contracts right now as we speak, to get that money in the hand so that they can have the rangers, they can fix the water purification systems and the sanitation systems and those kinds of things.
You mentioned
and then
Henry,
the other.
Go ahead.
And then the other $10 million of that is exactly for the specific purpose of keeping the facilities at those parks that were on the potential closure list open.
You mentioned Henry Coe, and certainly the folks I've talked to there, among the volunteers, the local park lovers who have put some of their own money forward to help improve that park management there, they're pretty happy with you. They're hopeful that you're going to truly turn things around. But you must be talking to some very angry, disappointed, and suspicious people.
Well, I've got to be honest, they have not come to the fore yet. What I have is it's been a remarkable welcome that all those involved with the California State Parks and Recreation System have given me. They have, they are, you know, and sometimes I feel like Atlas with this burden on my shoulders because of all of the positive that has come from the reaction of whatever their perception is of a Marine general who has been on the mountaintops of Afghanistan and been in the deserts of Iraq and the jungles of the Philippines. They have a perception that whoever that individual is, and they have a confidence in me that is a little bit scary, but at the same time, it's a kind of responsibility that I guess I have always somehow wanted to have that burden. You know, if not me, then who is kind of a question I always ask myself. And I say I could either sit home on a couch and complain, or else I can be and be the Monday morning quarterback, or I can get out on the playing field and try to help correct things. And right now, I've got to say that the people of the state of California who are watching this have given me a resoundingly warm welcome, and they have not come to me with just a ton of problems and issues.
I'm wondering if you can talk about that list of 30 you mentioned just a few moments ago. So many of the parks that had been threatened with closure managed to stay open with, you know, deals cobbled together to cover a year, 18 months, and, you know, we're right, rolling up on those deadlines now. So can you name some of the parks other than Henry Coe?
No, because we're in the middle of negotiating them right now, I'd rather not put their names out there because I don't even know how they necessarily feel about it. And the actual contracts are still at the staffing level, so they all haven't risen to my desk yet. I will look at every one. I will look at every recommended yes support. I will look at every recommended no report. Everybody will know that I put my signature approving the use of this money. So everybody, it won't be who done it anymore. It will be Tony Jackson did it. Okay. I'm now the official responsible turkey for everything that happens, good or bad, in state parks. And I won't escape that responsibility, but I will be very serious about it. And I'll treat it with that special trust and confidence which comes with the commission that the governor gave me when he appointed me to this position.
You mentioned people have a lot of confidence in a military mm-hmm. man. Do you think it helps that you're not really from the world of state politics, that you come at this as an outsider? It's almost a stereotype from somebody who's running for political office to say, you know, oh, I'm not part of this mess. I'm coming in to clean it up.
Yeah, well, I think it's good from a my appointment. I understand that I'm in a kind of a political world. I don't aspire to. I don't even claim a political party, and I learned that as a general officer. Okay, I know that I work for the governor and the Secretary of Natural Resources and the people of California. And I know that everything I do, there's a person that I look at in the mirror every morning that is going to remind me of my responsibility and my accountability. And I think that the people have a sense of that. Military institutions in this country are very highly respected. And I know that I represent more than myself and in my decision making. And so I understand, you know, the seriousness of the responsibility, and I think that the even the fact that I wore a uniform for over 36 years, it plays well in our uniform community within state parks as well. Being an outsider, but also having worn a uniform in service to the people. I think the rangers and the lifeguards who wear a uniform, they feel that I'm a kindred soul with them. And I feel the same way because I know that people in uniform don't get paid scads of money, you know. And I know they do their jobs for the love and passion of what they do every day. I mean, you think of our lifeguards. They're people that return sons and daughters on a daily basis back to their mothers on our beaches. And every day they get to play the role of superheroes, and that's kind of a And that's kind of a same feeling that goes throughout the uniform Park Service folks. And so it actually plays well that that I am a Marine, I have served, and I found the commonality between myself and those people who are in uniform in the Park Service.
You know, when you're talking to environmentalists or just simply nature lovers, the whole question about state parks and their present, their future, ranks really high on the priority list. But then when you look at state politics in Sacramento, or you talk to people who've got other priorities, like improving the state's schools or prisons, parks don't seem that important. And I'm wondering, when you call Governor Brown's office, do they pick up the phone or do they put you on hold?
Well, you know, so far, I have not called, although I have spoken to the governor one-on-one on a couple of occasions. But when I call over there and I want to talk to somebody, you know, the right action people, they pick up the phone. And they have even paid, from the governor's office, have paid calls into my office, some of his action folks. So, and it's the same way I've had an open door and a warm welcome from state senators and the assembly folks. And so it's kind of been, you know, I'm sort of, in a way, I'm still in the honeymoon stage here. Right. So the doors are still open. I haven't had to say a lot of yeses and I haven't had to say a lot of noes yet. And I imagine when I get into those critical decisions of yes and noes, there will be some doors that open real wide. Enough to throw me out. And those doors that, you know, so far it's, as far as the environmentalists, let me tell you that I have a real respect for what they do. It's kind of it's a long road, so I won't tell you the whole story of that. But, you know, I've been involved one way or another since the summer of 1990 with the United States involved in conflict in the Middle East. Some of those duties have taken me to the battlefields, and some of those duties have put me in other positions of great responsibility. And it seems like the 20-plus years, nearly 23 years, going on 23 years that we've been involved in conflict in the Middle East, it really brought to my attention during the senior parts of my career that a lot of it is wars are a lot about natural resources and limited and this very small green planet that we all occupy. We sacrifice greatly in national treasure, national material, but more importantly, in national blood.
And with that, I'm going to have to break in here. We're talking about California parks with retired Marine Corps Major General Anthony Jackson. We'll take a short break and come back. We'd like to hear from you. What do you want to see from the Parks Department in the new year? Here's the number if you want to join our conversation, 866-733-6786. You can also email us at forum@kqed.org, or you can go to our website, kqed.org/forum, and add your comments and questions online. We'll include them in our discussion, and we'll be back in just a moment. This is Forum on KQED Public Radio. I'm Rachel Miro. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Rachel Miro, sitting in for Michael Krasny. We're talking about California parks with retired Marine Corps Major General Anthony Jackson. There's little additional money to do it, but Californians expect this guy to keep nearly 280 parks open and running better than they have been in recent years. Were you one of the Californians that donated to save a beloved park threatened with closure last year? Do you trust that money is being put to good use? Call us at 866-733-6786 as we continue this conversation. Tony Jackson, let me have you continue, pick up where you left off about how your military experience has given you a broader perspective about what's important.
Yeah, as I was saying before, we make a tremendous sacrifice in national treasure and material and even the lives of our young men and women. And we've been doing that for over 20-some-odd years in the Middle East. And what it brings to your attention is that it's all about natural resources. These conflicts are a lot of times most generated by the competition that nations have for natural resources. My last job as a commanding general of Marine Corps Installations West put me in command of the Marine Corps bases kind of west of the Mississippi, and six of those bases are in California. So as we were rebuilding our bases and our infrastructure, you became very aware that we had to be very cognizant of energy reduction, the use of renewable energy in our construction, the preservation and wise use and recycling of water, and all of those other environmental concerns, including the plants and animals that where you're putting your bases and doing your construction and doing those kinds of things, including the natural resources of places where we actually maneuver and do our training. And so you're trying to do that and accomplish the mission that Marines are preparing for at all times. And so you find ways to take care of natural resources. And so I become a big advocate of that. Not only that, but I married a gal who is constantly reminding me. She's a member of the California Native Plant Society. Her family has had a rich history of trying to preserve cultural resources of California. And so you realize that the earth is small, and if we don't manage its resources wisely, that we're quite frankly either doomed to wars or doomed to run out of the resources for future generations. So I'm very aware of the concerns of the environmental community, and a lot of it revolves around my Marine Corps background.
Well, spilling blood can really change the way that you think about a resource. And it seems to lead into this question emailed from Jeff in San Jose, that he's angry at what he sees as the lackadaisical, just going through the motions attitude when he's looking at park employees whenever he's in state parks. From all appearances, Jeff writes, the state park system has become yet another government jobs program employing people who have little real interest in the outdoors, who just want good pay and unparalleled benefits.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't. Well, it's amazing to me as I come here and I find out that each state employee gives up nearly 5% of their pay every month and has been doing that for a couple of years. And so I would not say from what I've seen that they're doing their job for the pay and the benefits. But here's what I would say to him. Jeff, if you're out there listening, if you could give me specifics of where you've run into that, I'd be glad to address it. But when I can tell you from my, 10 or 11 months of freedom in retirement, that all I did was go to state parks, regional parks, and national parks. And in that first 5 or 6 months that I had my RV, I put just under 10,000 miles on it. And I can tell you every time I went there and people didn't know who I was and I had no idea I'd become the director of California State Parks.
And they didn't know you were going to be their boss.
Right. And it just seemed like everywhere. And usually I was being greeted by a volunteer or a seasonal worker, not necessarily career parks people, because all of the parks, including the national parks, are really supported by volunteers and these seasonal workers. And they were absolutely marvelous in directing us to the right spots and telling us what was in the area of great interest and things like that. And I was just coming in. So my experience is a little bit different than his, but I would be glad to address any specific park where he believes that's the attitude of the people. Because what I see in the people out there is, as I mentioned before, is a passion for the work they do. And I would venture to say that there are no really rich park employees.
Well, along those lines, Dorian Martinez asks if you have anything to say about the state park system basically being operated, as she puts it, by, for, about police. That, you know, these are basically sworn peace officers, the folks in uniform at the parks. Mm-hmm. She says if this structure is correct, we now have a situation where police officers are overseeing historic cultural resources, and those who are trained to manage museums and historic parks are forever subordinated.
Well, some of the curator of our museums are, in fact, museum curators. That's their career. The all of the rangers, I imagine, and the lifeguards are our uniform employees. Now, they're not the – they are subject to the civilian management, like myself now, and the deputies. A lot of the deputies are, in fact, you know, civilians, non-uniform personnel. I would say that, and I think down in Ocotillo Wells right now, are in charge of that park is, you know, not Ocotillo Wells, but De Anza Borrega, right next to Ocotillo Wells, is a civilian environmentalist. Not all of the parks are run by uniform, but all the rangers are in fact state police officers. You have to recognize that some of their duties are enforcing California laws, and that they are oftentimes alone and unafraid out in some very remote places.
Or at least alone. I don't know if someone's unafraid when they're coming up on a big pot grow.
Exactly.
Campers.
I mean, those circumstances, and as she may very well know that, you know, just a few weeks ago, we had some rangers that, you know, were threatened by an individual illegally camping at a park in Southern California who drew a machete on him and, you know, was within 5 or 7 feet of him before they took the appropriate action to subdue him. So it's kind of they are, in fact, but they're trained, and they're trained in park management. They go through a long training. Many of them graduated from colleges like Humboldt State or UC Davis or wherever they graduated from schools. They took classes in environmental management and things like that. And they do so when they get accepted to school to become a ranger. So it's a long process. So there are more, it's rare that they have to act as police officers, but because I would say the 95% of their time, they're doing the public service and keeping parks safe for all of the individuals who go to parks.
Well, let's turn now to the phone lines. We've got a number of callers who've got questions for you. Dan in San Francisco.
Yes, am I on the air?
You are indeed.
Yeah, I wanted to comment on, Ms. Miro has really been, I think, looking for the big surge of anger from the public over the mismanagement of funds scandal. And Anthony has really not been validating that. And I think the reason is because the funds were not actually stolen. No one has been lining their pockets. No one was caught, you know, paying for hookers in Vegas or something along those lines. It was an issue of a slush fund that wasn't correctly accounted for, but it wasn't a deep violation of the public trust. And I think the media has not made that distinction.
Do you want to speak on that, Tony Jackson?
Well, I'd say that that's pretty close to right. It was, you know, it was, I think, and unfortunately, when the money was the first time they found that they had this money, they, I think people were either afraid or fearful for parks' well-being, that if they disclosed it, parks would be penalized for it, or they would be, maybe they were fearful of their jobs. I don't know, because I haven't talked.
It would look bad after so many years, like,
right.
Oh, geez, this isn't going to look good.
Right. And unfortunately, it just built on itself until one person stepped forward about a year ago and said, hey, wait a minute, we've got to report this to finance. We've got to let everybody in government know that we have this money, because quite frankly, we can't even spend the money because now we don't have legislative authority to spend the money. And so fortunately, and when you think that this went back for, I reports, maybe the first accounting error was in 1993, compounded 1998, compounded. And then finally in 2012, somebody, and it's unfortunate that you had that string where somebody didn't scream out like this one good person did a year ago.
Well, that brings up a question I want to ask you. I mean, the whole scandal over the summer, and granted, it looked bigger over the summer when people were, you know, folding in $34 million in off-highway vehicle fund monies. But the scandal prompted your predecessor, Ruth Coleman, to resign. Mm-hmm. The buck has to stop at the top, one presumes.
Right.
But she's the only head that rolled, as far as we know. Is there anybody else who should be shown the door?
There's the whole executive up there is gone. The chief deputy is gone. I think the controller is gone. So there's a whole new clean slate up the executive of at Parks and Recreation Department.
So it's totally changed.
They're gone. It's probably a lot quieter. I mean, they didn't get the press that that Ruth got, but there's a whole bunch of people that are no longer in parks.
I want to follow up on what we're talking about now with the off-highway vehicle fund. Ken Ichi from Oakland writes, he wants to know whether the department's priorities are in conflict or where you find situations where that's happening, what the priorities are. He says the proposed expansion of the Carnegie vehicular recreation area east of Livermore meets the needs of the department's SVRA program. It seems to contradict the department's larger goal to preserve the state's natural resources. And I know that I'm sort of tenuously drawing these two things together, but there's $34 million dollars sitting in a fund waiting for off-road vehicle enthusiasts to enjoy. And a lot of people disagree with their approach to enjoying nature, but nonetheless, that's what that fund is there for.
Yeah, and state law gives them that. And state law also says that they should have off-road vehicle recreation, okay? And there's millions of Californians who enjoy the off-road vehicle recreational areas. And just like there's millions that enjoy our beaches and our redwood forests. And so you're right. There's every time, and one reason why there's this money in the off-road vehicle fund is because it is difficult with environmental concerns and concern for the natural resources to have more places opened up to them, more properties acquired for their particular type of recreation. But at the same time, I want you, if you go to those off-road vehicle parks, I would like for you to, I invite the public to sit down with the archaeologists, the botanists, the basically those members of the environmental community who work at state parks at the off-road vehicle places to help ensure that we are in fact offering those off-road vehicle recreational activities, and at the same time trying to preserve both cultural and natural resources. So there's a great balance there, and that is one. But when you look at that $34 million in that account, one reason why it is so is that high is because of the fights, the lawsuits, and trying to meet environmental concerns, which take years to kind of overcome, so that if they are going to expand their activity in any place.
And I don't want to shortchange Ken's comments. I mean, he's particularly concerned regarding the Carnegie Vehicular Recreation Area east of Livermore that, you know, off-road vehicle traffic can damage delicate species like the tiger salamander, the red-legged frog.
Right.
I mean, it does seem like it's an either-or situation.
Yeah, and I've had two office visits from people who are opposed to that. And I had my chief deputy go out there and visit it just, I think he was out there Monday. So we're taking a hard look at any proposals to expand there. I can't tell you I've come up with an answer or I'm leaning yay or nay at this time, but I can tell you it's under deep consideration here in the department. So it is, but, you know, we are trying to balance out the right of millions of people to enjoy that particular type of outdoor recreation and the environmental concerns.
Well, let's go back now to the phones. We've got Michelle in San Leandro with a question.
Hi, thank you. First, I just wanted to say that it's wonderful, as a native Californian who's loved our parks my whole life, to see someone taking the reins and really preserving the legacy of our parks. My question has to do more with the future. And I know right now there's a big struggle just keeping parks alive, but we also are facing climate change. And my question has to do with if there's anything in the works to build connections between our parks to help maintain biodiversity as the climate changes.
You know, that's I can tell you that we have people right now who are in attending climate change conferences to get more educated on that. I've been invited to one myself that I'm looking at my schedule right now. We know that there is some significant changes in the climate as it warms, and we can see what's happening with the polar ice caps and just the wild swings in weather we've had, whether it's record heat for the nation this year. But so we're going to be forced to look at it. We have to embrace the fact that there's going to be some significant changes. Now, how much of that? You know, the state park systems has 1/3, I think, approximately of all of California beaches on a very long coastline, over 1,000 miles of coastline. So we are very engaged in that, although I can't tell you that we've come up with any solid solutions or plans. But we're engaged with the academic community and the scientific community to try to figure out exactly how that's going to impact us.
Kevin asks on Facebook, what are the major expenditures for parks? Which is a great question. What is it you spend the bulk of your money on?
I'd say what is the bulk of our money? The bulk of our deficit's about $1.4 billion in maintenance that we haven't done. I would say that most of our money probably goes to the people who maintain the parks. And that is people in the field as well as here in Sacramento.
The payroll.
Yeah, it's people. Yeah.
With that, let's go to the next call. Sarah in San Francisco.
Yeah, hello. Good morning. Can you explain to me why dozens of parks are closed every day of the year under what is called service reductions? These are parks that are not on the official closure list, but they're virtually on lockdown to the public.
That's a very good question. Yeah.
And just one last thing. I want to know how this meshes with the legislation that Governor Brown signed that puts a moratorium on closed parks. Thank you.
Yeah, we do have, and it's really the state legislature that is in AB 1478 that says that we cannot close any parks for 2 years. Okay, so that's signed off on by the governor, and that's the way it's going to be for the next 2 years. Now, actually, before I got here, and is that some parks were actually at reduced services. If I look at the history of the state park in two ways, one, the 10 years ago, state parks were funded about 91% from the general fund, otherwise from your tax dollars. Today, state parks are only funded 27% from your tax dollars. Otherwise, over the course of the last 10 years, parks have had to do more and more self-revenue generation. At the same time, 10 years ago, there were 786 park rangers and lifeguards in uniform. Today, there's 586. So that's a reduction of pretty close to a quarter of the people, maybe not quite a quarter of the people. So if you look at the headquarters, is even at here in Sacramento, has significantly shrunk. So what you have is declining resources to maintain the parks that you had 10 years ago. So some decisions were made before I got here on the little used parks and facilities that we had, that they would be closed up. Now, we know that that affects some people much more than it does everybody. But for the health of the system, considering the resources that were available, those decisions were made. I have not yet reviewed any of those decisions to see if they were good decisions, bad decisions, popular decisions, or otherwise.
I think it's worth noting, too, that mm-hmm. even though technically no parks are closed, that what she's referring to is the kind of banker's hours a lot of the parks do keep, you know, open on Tuesday afternoons between 2:30 and 2:45 in order to sort of comply with the state law. Right. But it's not really an accessible park to the public.
Right. Well, yeah, to those who have those hours, I understand what you're saying. But if as I was going through a list on Monday of the resources at our parks right now, there is no park here that has 100% of its allocated people or 100% of the necessary funds required to operate the parks. So if I'm looking at a park that rates 20 people and they have 14, then you could see a consummate, a related reduction in services and hours. And that's what most of our parks face, by the way.
With that, let's go in-house to Miles from Santa Cruz.
Am I on?
Yes, you are.
Thank you very much. I was a California State Park Ranger for 41 years, and I just have two comments. The first one is to say that the ranger position, while it's a general state peace officer, has an extra duty that most people in the law enforcement community don't understand, and that is the fact that they have to protect the natural and cultural resources of the state parks. And that is a very specialized sort of thing that most state peace officers don't understand, except for maybe fish and game wardens. The other comment has to do with the fact that on June 30th, 1864, the president of the Abraham Lincoln gave to the state of California its first state park, which was Yosemite Valley and the Mariposa Grove of Big Trees. And that means that in 2014, we're looking at the 150th anniversary of state parks. And I was wondering if the director could comment on the upcoming anniversary celebrations. And I'll take my answer off the air.
Yeah. Hey, thanks very much for your comments and your 41 years of service. You outdid me. I got a few years to go to match you.
You're going to have to eat well and exercise.
Believe me, I do that. Yes, there's a committee right now formed that is working on the 150th anniversary celebration. And you know, we'd be glad to take any input. I don't have the contact, but we can get it back to the radio station. Anybody that wants to participate in that, but they're meeting right now and they're excited about having a really good and working with the public and our foundations and associations on having a real good celebratory year. I'm glad that your caller brought this up because, you know, California is kind of a special place. It likes to be out front. And the fact that this goes back to President Abraham Lincoln giving the first state park here in California is something that, even though Yosemite is now a national park, it's something that we should take great pride in. And we should not, you know, nearly 40 million Californians should not take that for granted.
Those lines, though, I mean, Miles, because you were a park ranger for 41 years, I know you don't remember Abraham Lincoln personally, but you do remember when there wasn't this massive backlog of maintenance required at every park and, you know, the banker's hours that we heard a previous caller complaining about. What was it like in the glory days?
Well, I remember when I was first assigned to Castle Rock, and I've worked in about 9 different parks. And when I was first assigned to my last park, which is Castle Rock State Park in 1980, and you have to understand that my name, Miles Standish, a lot of people think I'm 425 years old now. In 1980, we had 4 rangers assigned to the park and a full-time maintenance and park aides. There were times especially in the early 2000s, when I was literally the only person assigned to that park. So we saw a reduction in personnel in that park over a period of 25 years of at least 80%. It was very disheartening. I can't begin to tell you how difficult it was. Even though I lived on the premises, I was able to. I had to respond on a 24-hour basis, and it was very difficult to be able to pass on to the public that I just couldn't split myself up in that many small little pieces anymore.
Let's just let General Jackson have the last word on that. I'm sure what Miles describes is a frustration that you see system-wide.
Yeah, and it may not be quite as bad, but, you know, when you ask me about the reduction in services or some parks being closed, I mean, Miles has hit the nail on the head. And so, you know, my final word is to the public is we want your trust and confidence. I'm here. I'm the responsible person. I like to have an open door, open policy. Write me, email me, but let me know your good ideas. I'm wide open on that for making your park system the most successful park system in the world.
Well, I want to thank you, Anthony Jackson, retired Marine Corps Major General and the new head of our Parks and Recreation Department, for talking with us today.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me on.
And thank you so much to everybody who called and wrote in, Facebook, email, all of it. We weren't able to get to the many, many questions you had, but we appreciate the conversation, and we're clearly going to have to continue this later on with more talk about where California parks are going. Stay tuned to us. You're listening to Forum on KQED Public Radio.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg, and by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Schrem, owners of Clos Pegas Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.